Welcome back. Today we're going to be talking about Mary Badaracco. Cloudy and humid, it was one of those thick, breathless summer days when it feels as if something has to give. Not long after sundown, the foreboding skies let loose with drenching rain and crashing thunder, soaking the dark green hills of western Connecticut. The night was perfect for sliding unnoticed into the densely forested back country of Sherman and slipping away into a life. On the other hand, August 19th, 1984, was also a pretty good evening for dumping a corpse. The next day, all that remained of 38-year-old Mary Badaracco were her car keys and a wedding ring left on the kitchen counter. A rare party gift, perhaps to a husband who wanted to ditch her. That morning dawned, breezy and bright, like an open door to a new life. Maybe she really did have that sack of money, more than $100,000, her husband Dominic claimed, stuffed in her bags. Problem is, Mary was a fighter and a hometown girl who never strayed far. A feisty, compact woman of 145 pounds, she loved but a few things dearly. Her daughters, painting pictures, and serving beers on a smoky Friday night. Mary Pooh, her girlfriends at work called her. Her laugh could be heard across a noisy cafe. She's still missing. No body, no weapon, no evidence of a new life anywhere. But 16 years is a long while. Time enough for friendships to unravel and people who know something to think about speaking for someone who can't. And when it comes to the name Badaracco, therein lies a boozy, decades-old tale of fact and dark rumor of murder and hell's angels. Wrapped within it are violent men, an unsettlement women, tough workingman bar, and vanishing of a thereafter barmaid. Your mother left me. Sherry Passera was nervous as her hands gripped the steering wheel, driving up Route 37, a twisting black top that snakes from Danbury into the hills of western Connecticut. The forest seemed in place to almost strangle the highway. She thought about her mother. At dinner the week before, there was an odd edginess. Now, a few days after August 19th, her stepfather wanted to talk with her. Could they meet? Strange, she thought. He never asks for me. Sherry, 21 at the oldest of Mary Barcada's two daughters, turned onto Wakeman Hill Road and looked for her long driveway. The rest still feels like a dream. Mary's car, a 1982 Chevrolet Cavalier, was parked out front, the windshield smashed in the driver's side. Soon Dominic appeared. Your mother left me. She took some money and took off, he said. It hadn't been an easy summer for Mary and Dominic. After 15 sometimes violent years together, they had moved recently from Danbury to Sherman, renovating a home on a few pristine acres on a hillside where the deer came from the dark woods to eat right of Mary's hand. Mary and Dominic had met in the late 60s, tall and handsome. He was a man who at times could be a real charmer, driving children about on his riding lawnmower. She was a barmaid. He had a bar owner of places named Fats and Three Kings. He had four children. She had two. They married in 1970 and made a twisted Brady Bunch go of it. She would come to work with a black eye. Two or three times she would come knocking on my door at 2 o'clock in the morning and I would put them up. We called one friend, who like other remembers the times during the 1970s when Mary and her daughters would flee Dominic. Still, Mary always returned home. In spite of her happiness to be in Sherman, as the summer of 1984 wore on, life closed in. Friends noticed that the woman who never took grief from anyone seemed agitated. 9 months after Mary disappeared, Dominic Barato went before Judge John J.P. Ryan and said he and Mary had been planning in detail for a divorce. Mary, he said, agreed to leave and give up the home in return for approximately $100,000. He also told the judge during the divorce hearing that Mary happened to have taken just that amount of goods and cash that he had stashed around the house. No evidence of money has ever turned up. "You came home from work one day and she was gone?" asked Heidi G. Winslow, Dominic's lawyer, referring to Monday, August 20th, 1984. Mary was not represented at the hearing. Her whereabouts listed only as parts unknown on court documents. Dominic, who got the house, the car, and freedom from a 15-year-old marriage that day in May 1985, had one word for the judge: yes. What he didn't say was he had never bothered to tell police she was missing in the first place. 4 years, nothing. At various times, the peculiar vaporization of Mary has consumed no more than a handful of people. Her daughter Beth, now 36, is one. She keeps a thick briefcase that belonged to her mother, crammed with copies of dozens of letters she had written in vain to law enforcement agencies from Washington to Hartford. With her sister Sherry, they have consulted a psychic, even appearing on an early version of Reggie Philbin's talk show. Another is Lynn Taborsak, sorry if I mispronounced her last name, a former state representative and one-time congressional candidate from Danbury. At the daughter's request, she took up the case in 1980s and helped pursue the police to declare the disappearance a homicide and offered a $20,000 reward. She didn't wander off and start a new life, Taborsak said flatly. Like other friends and family members of Mary, Taborsak said she also felt local pressure not to get too close to the truth. There was a time a friend of the Badarakos told me to mind my own business for my own sake, Taborsak recalled recently. For years, police have felt that there were those who knew precisely what happened to Mary, but have remained silent out of fear. Last fall, however, the reward attached to the case suddenly jumped to $50,000, suggesting the police were on to something new. Recently, the state police added new detectives to the investigation and placed Mary on its high-profile cold case list. Over the past 2 years, this case has become more active, said Sergeant Wesley Clark, a former principal investigator on the case. People are talking. The police won't discuss their new findings, but there is plenty to examine in a disappearance that once seemed nothing more than a runaway rife. In 1985, there was a tip from an informant in the Federal Witness Protection Program that the Hells Angels had killed Mary under a contract hit. People won't say whether they are still looking at this connection. In 1990, Dominic's son Joseph, or Joey, went to prison on an arson conviction after hiring two men in 1989 to firebomb a bar owned by a rival of his father. Joey is an acknowledged member of the Hells Angels. Police refuse to say whether he is a suspect in his stepmother's disappearance. Now out of prison and living in upstate New York, he cannot be reached for comment. Then on Super Bowl Sunday 1997, a drunken confrontation at the Tortilla Flat restaurant in Danbury left another Barataro son, Dominic Jr., fatally shot. The fight had a connection to Joey. It began after his ex-girlfriend, the mother of his child, threw a drink in Dominic Jr.'s face. Just this past winter, a public defender sought to keep Joey out of the courtroom in the trial of a man charged with Dominic Jr.'s death for the fear that he would intimidate witnesses. The judge rejected the attempt, as well as an effort to ask Joey about something else, the whereabouts of his stepmother. 16 years later, Dominic lives in the same house and has remarried. Now 64, he starts his days working out of the basement of a Pembroke Road bar in Danbury, where he runs a siding and roofing company. No one has ever been charged in the case. Dominic denies any knowledge of what happened to his former wife. "I don't know nothing at all," Brattle said one morning recently before heading out to a job site. He hasn't spoken to her former wife's daughter since they reported their mother missing. "Once we talked to the police, there was no relationship. We were the enemy," said Sherry Pesser, now 37. As the years passed, she said she no longer worries as much about her lost mother. Some things, though, Passero cannot push aside from that day when she went to see her stepfather. What she found entering the Wakeman Hill home was a jarring jolt through her body that lingers still. "I went up to her room to pack," Passero recalled, thinking that a woman who left in a hurry without her car might leave something behind. "There was nothing there. I opened drawers. There was nothing. Not one odd sock, not one old shirt." They then looked around the house. She saw something more chilling. Every picture of Mary and her daughters had been carefully removed from the frames of the walls. Brown-eyed Mary Badaracco had ceased to exist. And that's the story of Mary Badaracco.